There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast. It's number 958. This episode brought to you by Squarespace. Maybe it's time for you to have some type of a web presence that is not social media. You could make anything you want with Squarespace. You can turn any idea you have into a website. Showcase your work. Blog some content. Blog some content, Katie.
Blog it.
That's what would yours be? Would it be a fantasy sports?
Mine would be about sports and dogs together.
Sports and dogs.
Dogs that play sports.
Puppy bowl?
Yep, dogs that play sports.
Would it be specifically puppy bowl?
Or fantasy puppy bowl.
Fantasy.
You have to choose which players you think are going to do the best.
That's a fucking great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a great idea. Well, if you wanted to make your fantasy puppy bowl website, Squarespace could do that for you with beautiful templates. E-commerce, if you wanted to sell any puppy bowl jerseys, everything optimized for mobile right out of the box, 24/7 award-winning customer support, nothing to patch or upgrade ever. So check out squarespace.com for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code ID10T to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. What do you got on the ID10T community corkboard?
Jose Arroyo writes, I'm writing in about a national event, but I figured I'd submit anyway to try to get as much coverage as possible. The U.S. Postal Service and National Association of Letter Carriers are hosting the 26th annual Stamp Out Hunger Food Drive on Saturday, May 12th, all across the nation. We are asking everyone to put out canned goods by their private mailbox or community mailbox, and your local letter carrier will pick up donations on Saturday. All donations go to local food banks in your community. Please help us collect as much food as we can, especially when so many families are facing hardships. Go to nalc.org for more info. And then also the NKLA Best Friends Super Adoption is back and coming up soon. It'll be happening Saturday, May 19th and Sunday, May 20th in LA at Warner Park in Woodland Hills. And in New York, Saturday, June 2nd and Sunday, June 3rd at Westchester County Center in White Plains. Both events will have thousands of dogs, cats, puppies, kittens, maybe even some bunnies available for adoption, plus food trucks, vendors, photo booths, and more. Visit bestfriends.org or nkla.org for more info.
Thank you, Katie Levine. This episode is Grant Gustin. The Flash, which is on the CW Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Lydia and I are big fans of The Flash. Pals with Danielle Panabaker, who's great. And Grant Gustin, I'd never met before he came into the podcast. What a lovely chap.
He's so nice.
So nice.
And he's just so sweet.
Oh, gosh. I really like that guy a lot. And it was very nice of him to come on the podcast. He's fucking awesome. So this is Grant Gustin episode. This episode also brought to you by Mattress Firm. If you're struggling to get to sleep, the fine people at Mattress Firm want to help. This is America's neighborhood mattress store. They're going to help you stretch your budget a little bit further when you're looking for ways to improve your sleep. These are mattress experts, and not just mattress experts. They're going to help you straight up build your bed, from headboards to adjustable bases to sheets and decor and whatever you need, they have you covered. Plus, if you go to mattressfirm.com, you can save 10% with the code PODCAST10, podcast on the number 10, through June 5th. Mattress Firm is going to give you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. You can sleep well knowing that you paid the perfect price.
You'll sleep better.
Go to mattressfirm.com to learn how your sleeping could be tremendously improved. And then also, this episode brought to you by Quip. Now, Quip, I subscribed to long before they were even ever a sponsor on this podcast. But essentially, Quip is an electric toothbrush that is a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes. And you can still get the right amount of vibrations to clean your teeth. And there's a built-in timer, so you don't have to think about it. It helps you clean for the dentist recommended 2 minutes. And then the guiding pulses will remind you when to switch sides. So you subscribe to this, basically. Quip subscription plans are for your health, not just your convenience. They're going to going to give you a new brush head on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. So you're going to get a mount that suctions right to your mirror. It unsticks to use as a cover for your hygienic travel whenever you want to take and brush your teeth on the road. And it's not just me. Quip was on Oprah's O-List, named one of Time's best inventions, and the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. And it's also on the hard list, which I guess is my list. Maybe it's the only thing on my list. I hadn't really made a full list yet. But they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at $25. If you go to getquip.com/ID10T right now, you can get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/ID10T, getquip.com/ID10T. All right, here's the ID10T podcast number 958 with Grant Gustin. Katie, roll the flash.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
What are you doing in LA?
Conan today.
Oh, you're doing Conan.
This and Conan, yeah.
Fantastic. Have you done Conan before?
No, at Comic-Con, like when he does.
Oh, you did his thing at Comic-Con?
Yeah, with Steven and Melissa.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah, Conan's fun. I like that they sort of embrace Comic-Con in a way that everyone else just kind of makes fun of it, but Comic-Con is a formidable force. To be reckoned with.
Yeah, for sure.
What was
force your... unlike any other.
Were you remotely prepared for any of it when it happened?
I don't know. No, not really. I don't think you can be prepared. I'm like still never like, I think I've learned to understand that I can never be prepared for anything in this business. But especially, yeah, when it comes to the genre world like this, the superhero world, it's... No, I don't ever try to prepare an actor that enters this world for it, because it's going to be different for everybody too, you know?
I mean, first of all, the CW shows have nailed it. They're so hard to get right. And I watched Arrow and I enjoyed Arrow, but the Flash for me was just like, it was fun. Like it has such a great, it just has such a great vibe and, you know.
We like to lean into the comedy when we can and have fun with it, you know, because it is a comic book genre and when it's there, we like to lean into it.
Yeah, I think I met Carlos at WonderCon a couple years ago, and I was like, "Holy shit, I love your show!"
On, yeah.
I know. I sort of fanned on him, and he was really cool about it because awesome, I think we were passing panels, and then Panabaker, she came on my old show at midnight, and was great. So you know, the wife and I enjoy your show.
Cool, yeah.
And
you
do a nice job with it. But you know, in talking to her about the schedule, it's pretty nonstop. It seems like, especially for you being the guy who the show is named after, you're pretty much in everything.
Yeah, it's the first two seasons, especially, were a little ridiculous. But since then, I mean, we've kind of woven in as much as we can, you know, storylines for other characters, new characters, but like, you know, seeing more of what's going on with Cisco and Caitlin.
Right.
So that's eased it up for me. And then we started season four, you know, with Barry coming out of the Speed Force. So I got off really easy going into four because I was barely in that episode. And then I went to prison. So that kind of freed me up for a while, too.
are you saying to the writers, like, hey, you think Barry could, just die for three episodes?
I've said those words exactly before. disappear into the Speed Force, and we don't have to see me in there.
Yeah, Speed Force equals vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Speed Force is Italy. Exactly. That's what it's basically. Exactly. It's going away. But you know, because Danielle, we keep almost having dinner with Danielle and her husband, and then... It's like, oh my God, I got to go back and work. Yeah. And I go, how many episodes are you doing? She's like, well, we do like 22 or something. But then there's the crossovers.
Yeah, 23 plus really it's four, like it becomes 27 every 9.5 months.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and then a 2.5 month hiatus, then we do it again.
Yeah. Do you do anything in that 2.5 month hiatus, or do you just power down?
I've tried every year to do something. Season one, I didn't work. I chilled. Nothing came together. After season two, I did a movie that's just finally coming out now, Crystal, with Bill Macy, mm-hmm. Which was fun. Last year, I had something that kept getting pushed until we were back for season four, and I'd already shot a day, and they had to recast me because Flash was like, we're shooting now, so. Yeah. And this summer, I'm going to Italy to do, it hasn't been announced yet, so I don't.
Oh, cool.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of this weird, hey, I just want to work and get on a TV show that's fun. And they go, your wish is granted. And
yeah.
You're like,
now you live in Canada and you will do nothing else ever again. It's hard. But I like doing what I love. So as tired as I am at the end of the 9.5 months, like if I can get a movie, I want to do a movie. You know, if it's the right movie that I'm going to have fun doing. And
right.
This summer I'm getting to do that. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I would imagine you will work forever if you want to. And you're still young, which is nice. Like you got so much. The world is just wide open.
That's the idea, hopefully.
I'm sure it doesn't seem like that when you're in month 4.5. You're like, oh my God, I'm only halfway through the season.
It's hard to pretty much think of anything else being a, like, eventual reality when you're in the middle of a 23-episode season that, you know, we'll probably do at least 6, I would imagine. We're going into 5. Like,
right.
Hopefully we do at least 6. So it's, you know, it's your life for the foreseeable future.
That's why I wonder why, like, when you go to Comic-Con and you know, people ask questions like, oh, an episode 18, and you're like, I don't remember.
Dude, like Natalie Abrams, do you know Natalie? She works for, now she's with, God, this is awful. She's Entertainment Weekly, I forget. But she's great, and I love being interviewed by her, and she came up, and I was like, I tried to, like, read every script between 16 and 23 really quick, because every question she ever asks me at the end of the season, I'm like, I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
At all.
Yeah, and then by the time stuff starts airing, you're so far ahead of where they're at that you just don't, you don't remember.
And I don't watch all of them anymore. I mean, I watch sometimes, but I don't watch every episode anymore.
Well, you live them.
Exactly. I used to, you know, season one, though, it was like so cool to be able to be like, that's me. I'm in the Flash suit and it's, you know, we're doing the damn thing. And it's, you know, I don't watch them anymore, though.
Well, you know, Andrew Lincoln has never seen a second of Walking Dead. He refuses to watch because he's afraid that he doesn't want his performance influenced by...
Like, and I get that. That's kind of why I've backed off now. I mean, Flash for me, though, was like the first thing that I was like, first of all, a series regular, or much less like the lead, you know? So I just wanted to like see just for the cool factor of like, that's fucking me. Like,
yeah.
You know, like playing the Flash, you know? But yeah, it does. Like you start to get... I can pick everything apart. Like not about me, about the show, about, you know, like... a plot hole here or there that fans complain about that it's like, yeah, no, we knew about that when we were shooting it. And it's
right.
Like, you know, a lot of it is what it is. And we're on a schedule, we're on a budget. But watching it's hard because you start to pick everything apart. And what's the fun in that?
No. And there, especially if you're in the mindset of deconstructing things, you can find
anything.
You can find anything. And most of the things that are going to be irritating to you, no one's ever even going to,
right.
They're never going to notice.
I like to rewatch things like Star Wars and other things, honestly, where like the universe is on the line, but you still see them making time for like comedy and jokes
right.
And stuff and levity and these moments of drama. And because that's the stuff that's hard to really buy and sell sometimes with a show like Flash. But it's
right.
Like you have to like believe what you're saying all the time or else it's not going to work.
Yeah. And then, you know, and a lot of it's just like crazy science jargon you're basically, I mean, essentially you're talking about magic. I mean, I know it's science, but in our universe, it's essentially magic. You're talking about
made
magic,
up science,
magic and metahumans. And, but CW's done such an amazing job of just... Because we've been watching Black Lightning 2 and like Arrow and Supergirl, like all these shows, they've really found a way to seed this universe that all is connected. I mean, Black Lightning, they only just talk about metahumans, so it's not, they don't really say anything like over in Central City, ..
Right.
But I imagine at some point everything's just going to all super crossover.
Steven said recently that he, you know, only, it's obvious to him that Black Lightning will cross over with one of the shows at some point. But I don't know. The word crossover has come to, give me a stomach ache. Seriously.
It's like, why? Because it's more episodes?
It's just, yeah, it's the most stressful time of year as far as shooting is concerned. And they always, you know, turn out to be the biggest and coolest episodes that we do for the reason that you're talking about. The fact that it's all like woven together and it's a universe that we find a way, you know, to all make work in an hour or 2 hour long, you know, special episode. But it's four productions coming together and shooting four episodes in a usually 10 to 15 day period. And we usually have 8 days to shoot, like, you know, any episode of Flash.
Oh my God.
So yeah, plus a second unit, like ninth day. But then this is doing that, but you're fitting in, like, you know, you have four different one-liners for 20 different actors that are on four different shows. So it's like actually impossible. I don't know how we do it every year. It's actually crazy.
I want you to spoil some of the magic for me. How are the effects when you're running super fast? Like, what are they? How are they shooting that?
I was just talking. Well, we used to do a treadmill, and I'd be on a treadmill, and I was like harnessed in case I'd like fall, so I didn't, like, you know, bust my ass.
Acting.
Yeah. I all the time, by the way, when they yell cut, I say that exactly. I go acting, like on Flash. I find myself saying it all the
Please
time.
Please remove me from my theater treadmill.
Yes. So funny to me. Like, we have the weirdest jobs.
It is weird. And it's funny that, you know, I think, you know, like, drama, theater, like, acting classes, they prepare you for the performance parts, like, the emotional performance parts. But there must be classes for, like, here's how to act with up against a blue screen.
Sure.
Or here's how to act in a harness.
If there are, I've never heard of anybody teaching them. There might be. But for me, it was, like, those were the things where it's, like, thank God I've always been a creative, like, person in mind, and this is, I actually love doing this because it takes me back to more just like playing around with my brother and sister and, like, you know, police and like the robber, playing cop and robbers, you know, as a kid. And just like, it's straight up make believe. Like, there's no scripts, and you just have to go there and like have fun, not worry about it, and believe what you're doing. You
right.
know? You can't be insecure about it.
I also did. I was in high school when the John Wesley Ship Flash was on.
Okay.
And I had forgotten. And when your show came on, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I went back. His suit is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's kind of like a weird molded. There's like these molded
foam
pecs.
Muscles,
on, like,
yeah.
He's all foamy and muscly.
I know. It was kind of at the same time, though, as like Keaton's Batman, right?
Same time, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's just
the same
funny
time.
That their suits were so different. Again, it was like they were trying to make that in 1990 on TV. Like,
yeah.
Which is crazy to me that was even attempted. But I actually like enjoy that show. It's just like so camp, you know, it leans into it.
It was really great that they cast him in your show because it was just a wink to the, I guess, the Gen X nerds who were like, oh my God, what a brilliant idea.
Allen,
oh my God, it's other Barry Allen.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
And he's the man. He's the man. And he's got like theater background. It takes it really serious.
Yeah.
John. Like, he's a great guy. I love working with him.
Did I read or someone told me something that you're a massive Dick Van Dyke fan? Is that
true? I grew up liking him and watching the Dick Van Dyke Show, and I've read his autobiography, and so I guess like more than an average person,
right?
But I don't have like Dick Van Dyke posters at home or anything. Or like,
what's that tattoo all over your?
No, I love him. I'm like a fan for sure.
Was that something that you wanted to? I mean, did you want to go into musical comedy? And
that was even like before I knew. Like Gene Kelly was more, and Donald O'Connor specifically, Singing in the Rain was like a movie for me that I watched far too many times for like, you know, any normal like 7-8 year old boy.
Yep.
But like Dick Van Dyke, I think, kind of was ingrained in me more subconsciously, where like physical comedy has always been my thing, like tripping and falling and hitting, like just for my mom, trying to make her think I was hurt. I got in trouble many times as a kid for that. And I think that comes from like Dick Van Dyke, you know. But then like Gene Kelly I got out of sports really at like 8 or 9 because I was just kind of losing interest and I didn't like going to practice and stuff. And my mom saw I was like in love with this movie and made me go to tap class, like against my will. But it's the thing that kind of sparked it all for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you still do it?
Last time I tap danced was last year. We did a musical episode. So I did a little bit in that, but before that, it's been like 8 years, like maybe more, but it was, yeah. I mean, I still like mess around and do it.
You know what? I think, you know, Dick Van Dyke's still around. He's on Twitter. You should tweet at him sometime.
I know.
But But I think the world is ready for another tall, handsome song and dance man.
I would love to be that guy. I've always said that. I want to be part of the... And it's kind of happening now already with Greatest Showman and like La La Land and stuff. But I used to say when I was like a 13-year-old doing musical theater growing up in Virginia, like, I want to be a part of the musical movie resurgence. And the original movie musical, you know? Because when I was a kid, they were like, Producers was on Broadway and they made that movie and it was terrible, you know? And Chicago was the only good one I can really remember from growing up where they were just kind of doing all these remakes and stuff of stuff. But I've wanted to always be a part of that resurgence that's now happening. So
yeah, and I guess it almost seems like in order to kind of kickstart that, you'd probably have to go do a live musical show somewhere, but you don't have time to do that necessarily.
I had an opportunity to go do one this summer. I had one last summer too, but it was how to succeed in business.
Yeah.
I was going to do that this summer and this movie happened and hopefully, I mean, it's been 7 years since I've been on stage. So
it's kind of, you know, I always think about how, when you have a lot of options, like when you have a lot of really good options and you start going, oh, I'm not doing enough theater. Oh, well, I guess I am doing a movie. What happens is you really will have to start, or maybe you are, making such specific choices and molding the kind of career you want. Because when we first start out, we're so used to just like, oh, I guess I should take that job because
I'm going to get paid.
Yeah, I'm going to get paid. I can't turn down work.
Right.
Yeah, no, who turns down work?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know?
Yeah.
But at a certain point, you really do kind of have to start going, oh, where do I want to end up?
Yeah, and it's honestly, I feel like someone in my position, you have to be really precious about it because it's like I'm the Flash on the CW. And it's I feel like by the time that's over, like I want to have at least like 3 films that I've done throughout that process.
Right.
So it's like, I'm not just the Flash on the CW when it's over.
Right.
You know? And getting on stage would be great. And that's something I want to do before it's over too. But I feel like if I want to have a film career when it's over, I feel like the responsibility to get it going now.
Yeah. Yeah. And the great thing about now is that I don't think people are typecast the way they used to be.
Yeah.
A long time ago, it was like, oh, if you were this guy, you were this guy. Or if you were this lady on a show, you were just her. But now people understand that everyone does a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So I don't think, especially because you're able to do other things.
Right.
I don't think that's going to, I really don't think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. I hope not.
Well, because now studios, film and TV, film used to be very snobby to TV people. Like, you're TV people. We don't.
Yeah, for sure.
No, thank you. But now, you know, the TV studios realize, I mean, the film studios realize like, oh, this person is, has an audience.
Yeah.
If they're popular, people know them, we should put them in our movies. Like they, you know, it's just smart to do that now.
Yeah. And more movie stars are just going to TV
because absolutely,
it's like where good stories are and good money is. And you know, it's if they're coming to TV, I think it's more accepting. They're like, well, people in TV can do movies too. It's
do you think whenever The Flash wraps up, do you think like, okay, no more TV for a while, I'm just going to focus on film?
No, I think I'm kind of, again, it's like whatever feels right, whatever happens, happens type thing. But I think if the right TV show was right there waiting for me and I could live in LA at home, and it just depends on what it is and when it is. And
you could be one of 3 productions that shoots in Los Angeles.
It's crazy. I mean, there's like 60 television shows, I think, or productions in Vancouver right now.
Oh yeah.
At any given time.
Well, it's not even just Vancouver. It's Vancouver. There's productions in Toronto. There's a lot of productions in Atlanta now.
Yeah.
You know,
that's where Marvel lives, I think.
Essentially. Yeah. 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 There's a lot of that stuff is there. Walking Dead's there.
Yeah,
like it's really become this,
Didn't they do their pilot in North Carolina, though?
Walking Dead?
Yeah. Did I make that up?
Shit, I don't know. I wasn't working on the show at that time.
I could have sworn it started in North Carolina for some reason.
Katie, to the internet. Yeah. Katie's going to find out. You know, I feel like that's something I should know. I feel like a big shithead. I should know that, and I don't know.
Not
that
as much as there anymore, though. That used to be a hub, too, was North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, North Carolina, yeah.
Like One Tree Hill was there, and I think Dawson's Creek
might have been. Dawson Creek might have been there, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife shot a show there, and she was just in this weird part of town where she's like, I don't have a car and I'm just next to a convenience store. Yeah,
it's
and
probably
that's
like
it.
Wilmington, like around there.
I can't remember.
That was my only like gateway to film and TV when I grew up in Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Virginia. And that was kind of like, you know, North Carolina was our gateway to like film and TV.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What was your first audition?
I forget my first audition. Well, it was like a student film I did when I was like, at Regent University, this guy was making this movie, and Yeah, that was like the first little thing I did. And then, you know, The Hauntings on Discovery Channel?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So those are shot in Virginia, and I'm pretty sure they're run out of Virginia. And I did one of those when I was like 16. That was like my first time on TV.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Were you the, but when he got home?
I was the boyfriend of the girl that got home.
Oh. So she was being haunted.
Yes.
You were haunt adjacent.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Did she get taken over by a demon, or did the ghost just try to scare her out of the house?
It was a ghost trying to scare a family out of a house. Yeah. And I was the boyfriend of the daughter.
You know, we watch a fuck ton of those. I watch them to basically just shout at them. I'm like, oh, come on. You know, we watch, my wife and I watch Investigation Discovery and then the ghost show. So it's like true crime murder shows and the ghost shows. And I always joke like, oh, the murder shows are the How It Gets Made of the ghost shows.
Yeah, yeah.
So you watch them and then they turn up on the ghost shows.
Yeah.
But the thing that I've noticed is that every time it's like a young person on the show and they're like, and then Billy had an imaginary friend and he was tearing up his room. I always feel bad. I go, these kids are just emotionally disturbed and the parents just don't want to admit
yeah.
that they fucked up some of the kids, you know, and they're like, oh, I guess it's a ghost.
He's a ghost.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, the ghost like flipped his bed over and smeared poop on the wall. Like, I think the kid needed
probably.
He might have needed some therapy.
Oh, man.
I don't think you need an exorcist. You just need a good psychotherapist to get in there and talk to your kid.
Yeah.
Was that the only haunting show at that point? Did you do other?
That's the only one I did.
Because a lot of those shows will be like, they'll pass around, you know, like reenactors.
No, that was the only one I did. And then like some regional like commercials and stuff. A lot of voiceover work, actually. There's this place, Studio Center in Norfolk, that I did, you know, regional and national spots there. Kind of anything across the board. And that was like my first professional kind of intro.
Could you give us a sampling of that?
That's what we're doing right now.
Oh, that's it. Thank you. All right, good. Well played. Yeah, well played.
Yeah.
What do they sell there? Is it just like
it was like radio spot, like whatever commercials. But the biggest thing I did for them was this like Fisher Price thing where, uh-huh. Do you remember Rescue Heroes?
Yeah.
It was like the,
yeah.
So there was this like a follow-up that was Planet Heroes, and it was like, you know, like heroes from every different planet. And I was Ace from Earth.
Oh.
It was Ace from Earth. And he was like this little kid that like was just this superhero. And I was the voice of this action figure, basically, that they made like these short cartoons to help market the action figures.
Right.
And that was it was such a big job. I was so excited about it.
Were you telling people like, hey, you fed Ace?
There was, I don't want to brag, but a local newspaper article about it.
So, what?
Yeah.
Newspaper?
It's framed in my
mind. The most relevant form of media today?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it's, you know, you seem super grounded for a person who, I mean, because Flash really was just sort of a meteoric. Like, that show took off immediately.
Yeah.
I remember, like, it aired, and the next day, people were like, shit, this show's really, you know, Flash is
super fun.
Yeah,
the pilot was really good.
It was great. And so did you feel your life sort of change overnight, and were you emotionally prepared? I know you kind of said earlier you're never prepared for it,
right.
But what did it feel like?
Kind of gradual, to be honest. The, like, getting recognized aspect of it has been really gradual. Like, honestly, in the fourth season, it's still like it's at its peak now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's kind of more and more people every year that aspect of my life is affected. But like, as soon as we started working on it, I was relocated to Vancouver, you know, and it was, I went from being an unemployed actor that was auditioning a lot in LA from Virginia that was already kind of like, what is my life? I was already kind of like shell shock. I'd come from the West Side Story Broadway tour, and that was more kind of like what I'd grown up preparing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Thought I was going to go back to New York, and then got Glee, like from the road. I was auditioning for stuff via tape and got Glee. And that kind of like, that was the first kind of like, whoa, social media changed and like everything changed a little bit. But it's all been really gradual for me where like that happened and that was really cool and exciting. But then I was like, not working again for like, you know, 6 months at a time, 9 months, a year. And then Flash happened like 3 years after my first Glee episode, moved to Vancouver. And I just went from being like, you know, bored and unemployed to like really, really, really busy, but living in Vancouver and isolated.
Yeah.
So it was kind of just one type of isolation to a different type of isolation.
Oh, that's a really interesting point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been someone, to be honest, that functions best. Like, I like my alone time. I like to run in small groups of friends, and I'm not social. I've always had kind of social anxiety, and I'm happiest when I'm working. So it was kind of, I don't know, a double-edged sword as far as the whole process of moving to Vancouver and doing a job. But we were separated from the success of it, I guess, is kind of the bottom line.
Oh, like, gotcha.
There's no, like, billboards in Vancouver for anything, like, for any movies or television. I don't know. That's like a... I think it's some kind of law there, actually. It's like they literally aren't allowed to advertise, like,
oh, that's
movies
interesting.
And television on billboards. It's like the dealerships have, like, monopolized the billboards or something in Vancouver.
Oh, I didn't know
I'd
that.
I'd have to, like, fact check that, but it has to be a thing.
Because you just don't see them everywhere.
And I've one of my drivers told me that at some point, that, like, the dealerships had monopolized kind of the billboards. But anyway, long story short, I just feel like we've been separated from the success of the show, and we kept so busy that it was, like, the same as, you know, when I was growing up, going to rehearsal all the time, prepping for the show, and then opening a show. It's like we're just going to work all the time and filming it, and then we watch it. But, like, the only weird, crazy things I do throughout every year are, like, Comic-Con, and that's 2 days.
Right.
Upfronts, and that's, like, a day.
Yep.
And then, like, just it's, like, things here or there where you're like, oh, my life is super different than it used to be. But then, you know, for the most part, you're just really busy and, like, working, and it's, like, I'm acting. It's like the thing I've kind of always been doing. You know?
Yeah, but I noticed that because I know you do have social media accounts, but it doesn't seem like you're too.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like you're too into it. Like it's interesting that with this, like your first sort of starring role in a show.
Yeah.
You still, I'm guessing, was like, oh, you know, I think I want to have my private time, and then I'll just keep all that separate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I've kind of slowly stepped away from, like, I was on Twitter, I was on Instagram. And before Glee and Flash, and then I've kind of been backing away from Twitter the past, like, I haven't used it in, like, 2 years.
Right.
Or, like, more. Instagram's kind of the only thing I use. And I don't know. I mean, it's – I don't know exactly why. There's, like, a lot of reasons why.
Yeah.
You know, it's a complicated thing. People can be really malicious to each other, and it's weird, you know, it's like kind of cowardice, mean behavior,
of course, because they don't have to be accountable for it.
Exactly.
So they can say whatever they want, and then nothing's gonna happen.
And I don't know, it's like I've never been, like, an oversharer anyway. Like, I'm not like a selfie a day type of guy. Like, I'll, you know, post a selfie every now and then, or, like, post something from my life with my, you know, fiance, or like post something from the upcoming episode of Flash, but, like, yeah, I don't do much, and my dogs, but not much more beyond that, really.
Yeah. And, you know, because I was talking to my wife, and, you know, someday we'll have kids, and she was like, I'm never posting a picture. If we have kids, they're never going to be online anywhere. Yeah. And I was like, oh, really? Like, I didn't think about it. She was like, no, there's fucking creeps.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we don't. Oh, I go, oh yeah, that's right.
There's something to it. I mean, we've had obviously conversations about that. We'll have kids in the near-ish future, and I see, like, Zoe Saldana, like, does something where, like, she doesn't show their faces.
Oh, like the back of the
it's
kid.
Like the back, like, yeah, the, she shows moments, but, like, she doesn't, like, I think she might have honestly changed recently her, like, she started showing them, but I know for a long time, until they were, like, a certain age, it was always, like, just the back of their heads and stuff.
Knowing my wife, she'll put, like, Michael Myers Halloween masks on them and stuff to mask.
Just put, like emojis over their faces. Like,
just, no, like, she'll put horror. It'll be all horror with her. They'll just, she'll make them up like Heath Ledger's Joker or whatever, but just like, oh, we're protecting them. Yeah. But that's just kind of, you know, that's the kind of way
they have
it.
No say in it, though.
Yeah, you can't.
Their life on social media, and they're, you know, they have no say. So it's like,
they're not given the choice.
Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, listen, 80% of the rules in the world are because of 20% of the dickheads in the world. So
yeah,
it's just like, because a handful of people ruin, like, social media should be fun, and it should be, and now it's just becoming really toxic. And
it is,
I know there are
good
pockets of it, but still, it's when people realize, like, oh, I can bully without any consequences, like, of course.
Beyond that, too, it's like, I want to look at a screen less, but, like, you find yourself just, like, scrolling the Instagram. I follow so many, like, sports pages and stuff, and, like, news outlets, and, like, funny people, videos of people falling down, and, like, suddenly you've been on looking at it for, like, an hour, and it's like, why am I doing this?
I could have invented something.
Exactly. Like, I could have been doing anything else, but here I am.
I just had the craziest experience with, I do stand up on the weekends, and I just did 5 shows in Denver at this club called Comedy Works. And a couple, I don't know, maybe like a month ago or 2 months ago, Dave Chappelle went by there, and he brought with him these little, like, neoprene cases, like the, you know, like when you go to movie premieres and they lock your phone in the case. Have you ever seen those before?
No.
So some of the premieres now, there are these cases and you put your phone in and then they lock it and they give it back to you. So you're not giving
so
it to
them. So you have
it,
yeah.
So you have it, but your phone's locked. And on the way out, there's a little magnetic device that pops the lock off and then you take your phone. So Chappelle brought all these cases to the club because, you know, especially someone in his position, if he wants to try new material, people are filming his sets. They're putting them online. It's not great.
Right.
So he did that and the club thought, oh, this actually is great. And they were like the five greatest show.
Everyone's just watching.
Everyone's just watching.
Yeah, yeah.
And you sort of forget that people are so, even if it's just a little bit, they're just not always in the moment at all times.
Yeah. I mean,
and having not been in a situation for so long where everyone was just engaged in something without being on their devices, it was unfucking believable.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, me and my like fiance will even have like not like fight like arguments sometime about like I was talking to you for the past 45 seconds and you like at least like look over once so I know you're looking.
Oh, I may be familiar
and
with that.
Back at
I'm
the
familiar
phone.
With that.
It's like I've been talking to you for 45 seconds and you haven't even looked over. You know what I mean? And it's like I don't think she's doing it consciously. It's just something that we do now. I'm sure I do it to her too.
Where
it's like you're just like I was looking at my phone already when you started talking.
Or so. Just like scrolling at dinner, just like scrolling on the thing.
Yeah.
Well, because it definitely does something to the addiction center of our brain where we just, it's a little reward system.
And I have an addictive personality and that doesn't mean I do since I was a kid, an addictive, but an obsessive personality where like I just can get hooked on anything and just that's all I think about. That's all I do. So it's.
Which is great for your craft.
Right.
But can also, I mean, I have that too. And, I know that it's when you're kind of aimed at the wrong stuff, your brain doesn't really make the distinction. So you really have to go pull out and go, oh, wait, I need to focus on this.
Yeah, I've been playing PlayStation for 5 hours.
Do you still have a game system? Do you still play anything?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big PlayStation person. And I actually still on set to have a Game Boy Color, the throwback. And
I still play
Pokemon on it.
Nice.
Yeah. But I'm a heavy PlayStation.
What are you playing?
Mostly, gamers always hate this answer because it's not the typical gamer answer, but I play mostly, the sports video games.
Yep.
I'm, a pretty big sports fan, so I play, The Show and Madden and 2K and whatnot.
You know, those are pretty popular games. I don't think anyone's going to
No, I know, but it's, I, don't really do, the shooter games or whatever.
Right.
I'll play, what's the adventure game that's so good?
Zelda?
No, I play Zelda sometimes, but it was, in the past, there's been four of them now, and I don't know why I can't remember. Nathan Drake.
Oh, Uncharted.
Uncharted, yep. Yeah. I love those. I love, the Tomb Raider reboot,
yep.
You know? But, I don't, play, I have a lot of the Call of Duties, but I don't really, play them more than once. So
I'm not a first person shooter game. I mean, I don't like army games and I don't like first person shooters. I like RPGs, open worlds, quest based, you know, magic casting, that's all my stuff.
Cool.
The sports games, I don't really understand sports. Right. So I really don't understand sports games.
I didn't grow up watching sports actually. I got into sports kind of when I moved to LA and I was alone and bored. And
what's a fella to do?
Yeah, really. My brother got me a Blake Griffin jersey his rookie season and was like, you should be a Clippers fan. And I've been a Clippers fan ever since.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah.
Katie's a huge sports fan. So she, you're a big Clippers fan?
Yeah.
Katie, what do you like about, what is it, when you like a team, what is it about the team that you like? Because obviously you're grafting your identity onto the team in some way. So is it the players that you like, or the personalities, or the way that they play?
For me, the reason I like the Clippers and not the Lakers is I gravitate towards, the underdog a little bit. I was always, growing up, I liked the Mets was, my team, and also the Orioles, because they were the closest to Virginia, and, Cal Ripken was my favorite baseball player growing up. But I don't know. I like underdogs. I have a sentimental reason that I like everything in my life, tattoos or my shoot. I get sentimentally attached to things in a weird way.
Yeah.
I have a weird a reason for every jersey I own and whatever. And I'm a New York Giants fan. That was because. In high school, you know, there's nothing in Virginia. There's no baseball teams, football, nothing in Virginia. So I thought I was moving to New York for theater. And I was logically, it was the New York Giants will be my football team. Because I'm going to live there. And I'm going to live in New York someday. And never lived there. But I've been a Giants fan since 2006.
But it just sort of anchored into your psyche.
Yeah.
And that's how it is now,
exactly,
from now on.
Yeah.
I think it's always interesting that performers, because I'm the same way too. I have a bit of social anxiety as well, where I could perform. I'm if I'm in control of it, and I have a microphone, you know, I've performed for 24,000 people and it didn't bother me at all. But sometimes, like, I walk into a room and I just, like, one-on-one, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to say. No, I don't totally. Know what to do.
Yeah, I've always been that way. Like, I don't, like, I've always been that way. Yeah, getting on stage or being in front of a camera kind of changes everything. And I'll even take it further and, like, I don't like karaoke because I'm like, or charades because mm-hmm. I'm, like, supposed to be good at it. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right,
and
right, right.
There's pressure to be good. And I'm someone that's obsessed with, like, the rehearsal process mm-hmm. and wants, I'm like, unless I practice this song, I'm not singing it at karaoke for anyone. Like, unless I know for a fact it's going to be good. Like,
there's a little bit of perfectionism in there. Oh, like, absolutely. It's got to be really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, have you found ways to sort of kind of shave that? Because obviously, this idea of, like, there's a perfect something in anything is impossible to achieve. Like, yeah. I know what you mean when you say it, but I couldn't tell you, like, oh, the perfect song is this or the perfect performance is this.
I guess for me as an individual, when I say that, it's like as an actor or a song, it's like, I felt like I wasn't watching myself through a magnifying glass. Like, I let go and I felt good about it and free and I didn't feel insecure. You know what I mean? Like, that's right. when I'm like, and I'm not going to feel that way if I just go up on a stage and sing karaoke.
Right. You know what I mean? Right. Or you'll have to, you know, the great thing about doing comedy is that if you fuck something up, you can just turn it into a joke and be like, oh, I was just fucking around. That's what I was doing. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, the same mechanism that makes performers, actors, comedians sensitive to kind of absorbing their world also makes them sensitive, mm-hmm. horribly sensitive.
Yeah.
I mean, would you trade that at all if you felt like, oh, I would never have anxiety again if I could just trade all that away?
No, I've always kind of acknowledged that and said that I know it's like, again, a double-edged sword where it's like, I need my, you know, emotion and sensitivity and anxiety to make me the, you know, actor and person that I am.
Sure. But does that make it harder for you when you're doing particularly emotional stuff and then you're like, you got to come home and shake it off somehow?
Yeah. I've been trying to, you know, get better at shaking it off quickly and just coming home as Flash has gone on. Cause it's like, Flash is like, cause you don't want to take it seriously all the time. Cause it's a comic book and it's like, you want to have fun. And I'm trying to get better about that, at having fun on a regular basis. Cause I do heavy, dark arcs that last for like 6 to 8 episodes. And like, it is just the Flash and it's like, doesn't need to be taken that seriously. But for me, it's like, if I don't believe every word I'm saying, it's not going to be as authentic and as good as it should be. And obviously it's never going to be like, you know, I always joke when we have a guest star and we're doing something and it's like, I have to like freeze. And I like exit like while I run and like everyone has to freeze for a second. And then we resume. And it's like a lot of special effects in the scene that like when it's over, I turn to him and I'm like, it's just like a live play, huh? Like, cause it's obviously not, but like, I have to take it seriously as an actor if I'm going to like buy what I'm saying. And that does, like, even though it's kind of just the Flash on the CW, it's like takes its toll. And especially season 1 and 2 and, still now, I mean, it's on any given day, we'll hold on to like whatever we've been doing in that scene or whatever. It's like I'll kind of be walking around in a bad mood for like that whole day sometimes.
Sure.
Because that's the source material that we're doing that day. And like, I'm buried in a kind of a dark headspace and it affects you.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's been nice when you get into the comedy on the show where you can find comedy into a scene and just like remember how fun it is too. You know?
Yeah. And it's really important to figure out how to do that. Cause I don't think you know, you'll work a long time, you'll do it for many years. And as you challenge yourself more and more and more with other roles, I don't think it's necessarily going to get easier, but it's very easy for me to see how people in our business get addicted to stuff because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, oh, I just need some substance to shave that away so I don't have to deal with it anymore. And then, you know, all of a sudden you've lost your life to a, you know, horrible addiction.
Yeah.
So it's a couple friends of mine have been doing meditation and I'm legit. I'm like, in a week, I'm going to take classes to just figure out like
how to meditate,
Well, essentially how to be present and not be stuck with whatever sort of emotional residue from the past or whatever sort of anxiety about the future. But like, how do we just
be present?
How do you just be present? And even if it just means, you know, being able to keep all this stuff at bay, what do you have particular hobbies or is it, do you have, is it like, I just need to be alone for a couple days and then I'm fine, or do you whittle? What do you do?
No, I mean, video games is a thing for me, like, at home and in my trailer sometimes. That's like, I feel like it's a way to, like, shut off. Like, nothing else is happening.
Right.
You're doing such a mundane, mindless thing in a way. But you're also keeping kind of your brain's active. Your motor skills have to work.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, my dogs are a good therapy for me. You know, I have two dogs that are, they used to be at work with me every day until my fiance moved to Vancouver with me, and now they're with her. But I mean, I have a pretty like easy, boring life outside of.
Boring is great.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, I've always been a homebody. I like being at home and watching movies and doing nothing. We're doing like a Star Wars puzzle at home right now, you know?
Oh, that's awesome.
Stuff like that, like just chilling.
What's the Star Wars puzzle? Because my wife and I are getting into some puzzles.
It's not like the A New Hope cover, but it's like one of the like A New Hope like
art gotcha.
Covers. Yeah, it's
gotcha,
like
gotcha, gotcha.
With like a lightsaber and like Kenobi's in the corner and like yeah.
That's fantastic. We're going to try this puzzle that's like, it's a Titanic puzzle, but there are clues. So, like, you solve the puzzle, and then the puzzle itself, once you solve it, has clues to solve some sort of an overall story mystery of the puzzle. Yeah, I know.
Awesome.
I know. I got, like, genuinely almost, sorry to say this, almost sexually excited by the discovery of this puzzle. I'm like, sweetheart, we're going to do this puzzle. And she was like, oh, my God, that sounds fucking amazing.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Are we old? What?
I was like that as a kid. I like. There's a picture of me as like a four-year-old, like sitting on the floor, like in just my underwear, with like five different puzzles, like looking like a beautiful mind. Like.
We just let him solve them all at once. Yeah. Watch, he's very. It's adorable. Yeah, but that. I mean, that obviously is a sign of a very active mind.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, do you think? I apologize for how dumb this question is going to sound, but you know, when people play characters, sometimes they'll take away things from the characters. Yeah. Obviously, you know, stuff that Barry is going through. Have you learned anything, or have you taken anything away from that, or any? Has there been any personal discovery from him?
Yeah, especially earlier on. First of all, it was weird how like things would be like. The journeys felt really parallel throughout the first two seasons. And it was like, as he was getting these powers and like all this new responsibility and stuff, it was like, I was starting on my journey with the show and like get all this new stress and responsibility. And,
yeah.
It was bizarre. I mean, it was like, it kept feeling like all these like little tiny checkpoints throughout the year were like parallel to me. But, I think mostly just like his kind of optimism and whatnot I've tried to bring into my life, because I can be negative, pessimistic.
It's so easy to do. It's so easy to do.
Yeah. And I think Barry's actually gone further down that hole kind of as the show's gone on.
You know,
he's taken on more stress and been like less optimistic. But,
he was so wide-eyed that first
really
season.
Was. And like that was kind of the thing that I tried to take on from him was like how to be more optimistic and supportive of everyone around you. You know?
Yeah, but you know, when your mentor turns out to be your nemesis, and it turns out you can bring back your dead parents, and
if
then
you want.
Fuck up some timelines, and then you're in love, but then that gets fucked up, and then you go to...
It's a hard story, there's a track.
It's a lot. Yeah, I remember that the first couple seasons, Star Labs was literally the easiest place to break into. I'm like,
still
is there just a fuck...
It still is.
People just walk in all the time. Like, this is our headquarters.
We've talked about it at, like, convention before and, like, in interviews. But we used to have a joke throughout the first season mostly that it was – we had a security guard named Gunter that was just, like, always like, oh, you can't – and they would, like, kind of follow him in and just – walk away. And
I'm sure it will be fine.
Yeah, Gunter just wasn't
I'm sure it's fine. it's fine.
It's a good Gunter.
He's, you know, he's nice.
Yeah, he's very nice. I always pictured him as very round. His clothes were a little too small.
Yep. Yeah, he's probably an Austrian guy. You know, he's just eating strudel or meatballs, and then people just waltz right through.
Yeah, Star Labs is not secure.
You know, that's all that they could afford, you know? It's like, Cisco can make all these high-tech things, but it's, you know, he's making that. It's not like they can afford really
payroll.
Good security.
Yeah, no,
yeah, there's no benefits program.
No, there's no benefits program.
And you're essentially, you just have this creepy dungeon master prison underneath.
Yep, where we don't feed you or let you go pee or poo.
You can't shit anywhere. I honestly, there's a friend that's like, where are these meta-humans meta-shitting?
We shot a scene at one point that might have gotten cut that was like, Caitlin taking like a tray of like Big Belly burgers to them, and I was like, hey, catching up, talking to her about something, and then like, and she rolled away to take them the food, and I think that scene got cut. But like, we were like, oh, just giving them Big Belly burgers every day, I guess.
You know, that I think that's just sort of the like, well, it's a comic book.
Right, right.
And it's fine.
Yeah, what do you want from us?
Yeah, come on. You know, when you're not seeing them, they're fine.
Yeah, I've had people try to, like, explain, like, Savitar to me and all the, like, the timelines. I'm like, yeah, I...
No.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Well, you have to take the, why spoil it?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Oh, that's a spoiler.
You can't do that anymore, though, when, like, season 4 is now over and that was season 3. You
know, right,
like.
right. People still get upset. It doesn't matter.
It's
like,
true.
If I... It, even the fact that I said the thing about your parents and about, you know, and about Tom Cavanaugh's character, people were like,
I was gonna watch that show.
Yeah. I was gonna say, like, if it was that important to you, don't you think by now?
I kind of don't care about the people at this point that are like, well, I was gonna watch it. It's like, well, it's, you know.
You know, watch for the performances.
Right, right.
Maybe just you don't have to be surprised by everything all the time.
That's the, I'm like, never catch one episode and just watch an episode of Flash with no backstory, though, because then I feel like everything just seems ridiculous, including the performances. Yeah. Without, like,
oh, yeah, well, because the show is so, it's so much builds on everything that came before it.
Yeah.
Yeah, occasionally when I see Kevin Smith or if he's on Talking Dead or something, I'll be like, give me some Flash spoilers.
Yeah.
He's like, nah, man.
Yeah.
Can't do it, you know.
And he's a fanboy, so he gets it.
He is. Yeah. And thankfully, he's okay. Oh, my God, Kevin Smith.
And 35 pounds lighter or something now.
Yeah. I think he was already starting to get a bit healthier when all that happened. But he's all okay now. Everything's fine.
Thank God. That was scary.
Kevin's all good. So you have a pretty regular recurring stable of directors that kind of weave in and out?
Yeah, we have at least, like, I want to say, like, 3 to 5, like, new people a year. They, like... I think it's the studio that they like trying new people out. But we've got, people that have been doing it since season one and people that kind of come up within our ranks that are either like an AD or a DP that have, or a script supervisor that have gotten chances to direct.
Have you directed one?
No.
Would you?
I'll say this. It's made me want to be a director someday, for sure. And I feel like I'm learning a lot to do that. But I don't think I'll ever direct one, no. I think it's just... Unless I, like, literally wasn't in the one, like, before. Because it's just, like, the prep, you know? And I don't know that I could do it. And do the... Like, again, I'm a perfectionist. And it's like, I don't think I would do the job that I would like to do as a director or an actor, like, during that process. Just because it's so much. Especially as the lead of a show. And I know so many people have done it before, but... I don't know. I don't think I will.
I think it'd be... I don't know how people are able to, when they're the star of something, direct at the same time. Because I just think, well, how do you get the part... Like, how do you get all the big picture stuff out of your head? Like, how are you not editing your own dialogue in your head as you're saying it to someone?
Totally.
Well, maybe they... I don't know. Maybe there's an episode where Barry decides to just make a film... And so it's all from his point of view, but then you're actually directing the episode.
Are you listening, CW, to these solid gold ideas? You're welcome.
You're absolutely welcome.
That is solid.
I mean, is there anything... These types of shows I think are always difficult because each season you all, you know, it's like, oh, we have to encounter the biggest thing we've ever encountered. And then the second season is the biggest thing. And then by the fourth or fifth or sixth season, like, fuck.
Talking episodically. I'm supposed, like, in every episode, there's at least one line where they've stopped doing it because I, like, was like, stop doing that. But they would write, like, more determined than we've ever seen him. And throughout the first season, like, you know, I would try to build, and then, like, until you feel and see when you watch the show that it's like, I'm pushing because they're writing, like, more and more. And it's like, I can't do more time.
Right,
like, there's a ceiling for, like,
the most means the most.
And then it's like, was their favorite thing for, like, and because it's true, it's like, you have to keep raising the stakes or else it's like, why do people keep watching?
So right.
It's, every finale, it's like, you know, bigger stakes than we've ever had.
And it is hard, too, because, you know, I'm sure fans want to see new stuff, but they also want to see the stuff they're familiar with.
Right.
So how do you keep that balance and just keep it... I guess it's better just to not worry about it too much and just do what you
do. Especially in my position, I don't worry about it. I honestly don't even, like, pitch ideas to them or, like... read a script and go, hey, we should change this. I mean, if anything, I'll call and say, like, The only changes I make to scripts are if, like, they've... I don't need to say everything. Where it's, like, I can shorten a line. Because I like saying as little as possible and conveying it with my face. You know what I mean? And if I feel like there's, like, a line that where it's, like, four sentences and it could be two, that's the only thing that'll be like, hey, can I say less here?
Right,
but
right,
I've never called them and been like, I think we should do this for an episode. Which, again, a lot of actors do, especially lead actors. But I don't know. I've just kind of never – I'm like, you guys write it? No, just try to do it.
Well, it's a lot less it's a lot less strain on your mind, you know, if you don't try to take on the whole the whole production.
There's already extra things I feel like you take on in television when it's like – script supervisors alternate, like ADs alternate, directors are guests. So it's like the consistency has to come from the cast.
Oh, yeah.
So and to be honest, like I take pride in like how precious I am about continuity, and not just continuity with like, you know, continuity, but like story continuity.
Right.
Of like, no. We have already like, there's actually... It's like something coming up in the finale where we have a line where I'm going to have to talk to them about it because I'm like, we already know this piece of information because we learned it in 22. And like different writers write different scenes.
Oh, right.
And different directors take care of episodes. So it's like this next director won't know that we learned this piece of information in the previous episode.
Oh, shit.
But I remember talking about it. So I'm going to have to talk to them about this line because I'm like, we already know this information. We shouldn't be learning this.
Oh, my God. You have this whole universe in your head. It's just all stuck in your head.
For real, though.
Oh, like, my God. And I honestly don't. Katie, can you just pull open the dishwasher because it's going to keep beeping? I honestly don't know how, like, you know, with Walking Dead, I only watch the day of, so it's not stuck in my brain.
Right.
But having, do you have all the scripts, do you have all the storylines in your, like, at once, or do they just give them to you one at a time? Do you know what's happening in the show?
No, there's been one thing that I've known, like, when the season started that we were going to do in the finale.
Uh-huh.
Connected to the mystery girl this season. Like, yep. I've, like, known what that is the whole time. But that's literally the only thing about this season that I've known. Like, even I just read the finale script for the first time 2 days ago and didn't know what it was about until I read it. So it's like, it's always the case. We never really know where it's going.
And do you read scripts and go, holy shit? Or are you pretty...
Less now, obviously. But yeah, I used to do it every script. I mean, it's just like, it's sad when you look back on it like that. Like in season 4, you're like, man, I don't get as excited. But
well, you're used to it now.
Exactly. I just had a director that was just like, I came out on set in the suit and he was like, do you just feel so cool? And I was like, I'm not really. It's kind of like the head's uncomfortable. And like, Kevin cried the first time he saw me.
Oh, that's so sweet.
He was like standing in the Cortex and I walked into the Cortex and he was like, that's the Flash. Like, it just started like, he teared up. Like,
oh, he's such a teddy bear.
I mean, he was like, you know, the reason we were so excited to have him come direct was, I don't know if you know about this. It was after season 1. He like had filmed himself watching the finale because someone had recommended that he do that, knowing what a big fan he was of season 1 and that the season 1 finale was going to like fuck him up, basically.
Yeah.
And it did. And he had filmed himself. And it's like a 7-minute video that he cut together of him watching the whole episode. And the last like 2 minutes of it, of him, he's crying hysterically.
Oh, that's so
like,
sweet.
He's talking to us. Like, I mean, I've never seen another fan video of someone so caught up in it. And
yeah.
I mean, so we were so excited to have him. And I don't know if you know how he directs, but he, like, before every take, it's like, all right, guys, like, we're going to do this take. It's the only time we'll ever do this. We watch these amazing actors right here do what they love to do, and everybody's going to have the time of their lives. We're making the Flash. Woo! And then everybody claps, and we do the take.
Oh, like, that's so fantastic.
Every single take. Like, not every scene. Like, every take. It's crazy.
I think the problem is that Kevin's heart's just too big for his body.
Really. I mean, he really gives, 150% of himself with whatever he's doing.
But that's interesting that you said about how the cast is the consistent fixture.
Yeah.
Because all the directors. So, you know, if you have a director like that one episode, the next episode, like, all right, just sit over there. Are you guys like, no? Or do you just sort of, like, roll with the...
No, I will. You know, I would love to say that we're really good at rolling with all the punches, but no. I mean, it's a cast of mostly people from theater,
right?
That know what they're doing as actors, and know how to, you know, work on it and have spent time working on it. We're not showing it up, like, not knowing our lines and kind of not understanding what's happening. And we've all tracked our characters. So we're pretty strong-willed, too. And, I mean, there's, you know, we're not going to have, like, fights on set, but we'll stand there and argue with the director about, like, why it's this or why it's that. And, like,
right.
We don't want to be dicks, but it's, like, well, and that's, like, every once in a while, a director, where it's, like, they block differently or they have, like, a lot of notes and it's, like, they're just, it's just their style.
Right.
And, yeah, we don't necessarily roll with the punches as good as we should, probably.
Well, because you obviously have to, you have a system that works for you.
Yeah.
And your faces are on the show and you've been with the characters a long time and you know what works. And so it's just, like, well, this is, we kind of have to figure out.
We're very precious about it, yeah. And like you said, it's, like, it's a in there for, in a time capsule forever. And it's The Flash. It's a show that, like, 20 years from now, like, there will be people still watching, you know, and, like, I will hopefully still be working, and I don't want to be, like, ever embarrassed by what I did, you know.
Right.
I want to always own it and you know, believe what I'm doing. So sometimes that means I have to, like, stand up for, like, a moment that I, like, I'm like, no, I've worked this out here, like, I need to do this here,
right,
you know. And it's, like, this has been, I've been building to this for 2 episodes or whatever, 3 episodes, so it's, like, this is a greater arc for me that,
right,
like, the other, that one, any director might not necessarily be privy to, you know,
like, like if a Spielberg came onto your set, and you're like, Steven, this is how,
like, listen, I get it. You've been around, you've,
yeah,
done,
you've done
things,
some stuff,
like,
but this is how we do The Flash.
Yeah, no,
I'm
no,
sorry.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen. And that is why it's nice too, to go do, like, other projects for me. It's like, all, you know, I went and did the movie with Bill Macy, and literally going into it, it was like, anything this guy tells me to do, I'm going to do.
Right.
Like, no questions asked. Like, whatever he wants from me, I'm going to do. Going to work with Martin Campbell this summer, same thing. Like, anything he wants to tell me to do, like, I'm going to do it. You
well,
know? Like,
and
I'm,
because you're essentially in this, the other technical marvel of your show is that it's a masterclass. You're basically shooting a movie every 8 days.
Yeah.
And again, you're going through all these changes and you're having to do stuff on the fly. I mean, doing that for a number of seasons is like, that is a master's program in when you start doing more films and you start doing different films or different directors, you're going to have such insane tool sets in place because of this show.
I never have taken like an acting for camera class, like, in my life. Like, it was something I was going to do. I was a musical theater major in college, and that was something that I had the option to do my junior year, and I was going to do it, but I left to do a Broadway tour, and never did one growing up, never did one in LA. So, like, this has been, like, my, like, acting for the camera class the past 4 years.
And, yeah.
I mean, I remember when I got cast on Glee, like, Darren Criss gave me a book for, like, film TV 101 stuff, because it was like, I didn't know what a DP was or a gaffer or a grip, or like, I didn't know the name of anyone's job.
Right.
I, you know, knew, like, on stage, if, like, you were given, like, a mark, like, you hit the mark and it was, like, for your pool of light that was, like, scheduled to hit you, like, right there. So, like, you had to hit that mark, you know. And it's a little different in TV and film because you can stop and readjust. And I remember, like, sitting, though, like, my first day, like, we were in the Lima Bean on Glee, like, doing this scene with, it was Chris Colfer and Darren, and they had my mark, and I was sitting in a chair, and they were just shooting over me to them, and I was so worried about, like, so I can't move at all, right? Because, like, this is my mark, and, like, there's a camera. Like, I thought, like, I couldn't breathe because I had to stay so
still. You're just
going to
fuck up the light or fuck up the shot.
Anything, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was, you know, I went into TV knowing nothing about what it was like to make TV, what the process was. So it's, past 4 years have been a crazy learning experience.
One of the things that I love, because, you know, Arrow is such a broody show, like, you know, Arrow is such a broody character.
Yeah.
That it actually, when Arrow crosses over onto The Flash, it actually makes him funnier. Because that added, like, that,
it's funny. It's
that,
like, a comedic relief.
He's the comedic relief because he's so serious.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
it makes it 10 times funnier when he's on your show,
and vice versa. Like, when I go to Arrow, it's like I feel like, oh, I'm just the comedic relief here. Like, I don't have to, like, carry whatever arc we're doing as far as the drama. You know,
yeah.
I just go over there and get to, like, play off them and have fun, and
yeah,
it's great.
Are you guys? I assume you'll be at Comic-Con this year.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
And is that part of your shooting year, or is that in the middle of your vacation?
No, it's actually super inconvenient, to be honest. Because the way it times out is we're always, like, on our second day of filming the second episode.
Oh, gotcha.
We've, like, started the first,
You're just hitting the momentum.
We're literally just getting going. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then we're like, let's stop for 4 days. And
talk about last season.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything in particular that you're... I've been asking people lately just because, you know, it's we see a lot of toxicity in the world. But what are you excited about? Like, what's something that makes you joyful? It doesn't have to be work-related. It can be anything. It can be a concept, a thing, anything. Is there anything in particular that makes you happy right now?
Well, I mean, the first thing that obviously popped into my head is I'm getting married. I haven't been giving out the specific date or month.
You don't, yeah, but yeah. Yeah, but congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, a lot of just, bless you.
Thank you.
Personal things that are happening, you know, with just... the wedding, and we're finishing our house, and you know, it's like my real, like, kind of adult life with this person I'm going to spend my life with is kind of shaping together. So that's kind of been the everything outside of Flash for the past year, really.
Let me give you a piece of unsolicited advice, and it goes back to the Chappelle thing. So my wife was insistent that there were going to be no phones at our wedding. And I was like, you're out of your mind.
My fiance is saying the same thing, too.
It was the best thing that ever happened.
Not having them. Yeah, well, no, that's our plan. Honestly, when you said the Chappelle thing, I'm like, maybe if there's a way, we can do that. Because I know people are weird about, like, here's my phone.
I'll give you the info of the company that makes them.
Okay.
Because they... She was insistent, and my wife's super cool, and it's very rare that she puts her foot down. And so when she put her foot down, it was like, no phones. I'm not gonna have people filming shit. I want them there in the moment. I want them. I was like, okay, we'll do it. It honestly, again, was just like the shows I did. Everyone was engaged. Like, we felt the whole experience in real time. Mm-hmm. Everyone was.
And it's sad too that we have to be like, that's a thing now. It's like,
I know.
That's like life without smartphones is like, oh, we're all looking at each other and like, this is
giving
crazy.
A shit about talking
like,
to each other.
Eye contact
conversation
here.
Even?
It's sad, but it's like, yeah, I mean, there should be more, you know, opportunities in life to be like, no phones.
I highly, highly, highly recommend it. And I think people will respect it, obviously, because they, you know, they'll know that you want to keep it private.
Right.
But just for the experience, having real world, like, non-digital interference experiences is, I'm really, as much of a tech guy as I am, I'm really starting to appreciate it. And I think you'll love it for your wedding, because I remember, even though, you know, it goes by, obviously it's a blur, but I remember so much of the wedding because everyone was present.
Yeah,
an engagement. So I just, that's my one little bit of advice. And I think
that was
really...
our plan already. So for sure, I think now I'll follow up and do it.
And pantsless jugglers. If okay, you, cool. you know, just to mix it up.
All right.
No, we actually had zombies. We had like, she had zombie servers at
that's
the wedding.
Awesome.
And so we had, you know, we had all sorts of fun stuff like
seems
that.
Seems on brand.
Yeah, I mean... That was very hard to believe that we I know. It just, you know, it was, but it, she kept the ceremony to, like, I think it was maybe 12 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Like, there was a little reception, a cocktail pre-party, 12-minute ceremony, right into the party. No speeches.
We're doing, I don't know what the speech situation is, but my favorite thing about this, and I think this is the first time I'm saying this publicly, but I was going to post about it at some point anyway, but Tom Cavanaugh is actually getting ordained to marry us.
Oh, that's the best! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! You know he's going to double-cross you, though.
Well, I just, it's going to be, for sure, like, stand-up comedy, and he's going to, for sure, go in on me to some degree. But I just know for a fact that he's going to have everyone in stitches, and he'll know how to bring it back. He knows us as a couple, and he's, like, spent, honestly, more time with us as a couple than, like, a lot of other of my friends, just because we're in the Flash world together. But I know he's just going to bring it back home and, like, make everybody cry.
Oh,
like,
my God. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
He is. Did you ever listen to the podcast that he did with Mike Black, Mike and Tom Eat Snacks?
Like, one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're so funny.
He's just a funny guy. He just seems like a guy. I don't know Tom at all, but
never,
he just seems great.
You should have him on here. I mean, he never turns off. So, little story about Tom. It was like, first time I went over to his house and, he, like, literally never turns off. Like, we're always doing bits on set all the time. Non-stop bits that are just kind of like, we'll beat them into the ground. Like, we always say, like, the comedy in our bits is that, like, we don't stop.
Right.
We just keep the repetition. We keep doing them again and again and again. And he literally never turns off. It's like having a jester on set. Then I'm at his house for the first time, and he's got four kids. And his youngest says to me, little girl, she says, he's going off, and he's doing this, he's doing that, and he's just 1,000 miles a minute. She turns to me and just goes, this is my life. And she's like, four. Like, and I'm like, me too, but at work. Like, I'm Like, I love, like, that they're, like, not running around, like, taking on his energy, that they're just like, our dad is crazy.
They're all going to be, like, yoga instructors.
I know,
it's
yeah.
going to be quiet wherever they are.
Yeah, I mean, they're an amazing family. They really are.
I suspect that when we have kids, it'll be the same thing. Yeah. My kid will just be like,
my
do
dad.
You have an off button?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
This is, you're embarrassing me in this restaurant.
Exactly.
It'll be the opposite. The kid will be like, please, don't.
Yeah, please stop.
Stop
don't
kicking the chairs.
Don't do anything to embarrass
me. Cut it out. Like, please, don't kick yeah. the chair of the man
we're
in front of you.
In a public place.
Yeah, come on. Seriously. Yeah. Were you raised in a barn? You were raised in a fucking barn. Yeah. Hey, F-bomb, really? I'm so happy for your success. And I'm, you know, again, my wife and I are huge fans of your show. And,
thanks, man.
And I love so many people in your cast. And it was an absolute pleasure having you here.
Yeah, thanks. This has been really fun.
In our you know, it's our weird museum house.
Yeah.
come back anytime with the 0 extra minutes you have in your life.
We'll see the studio at some point.
You have to, yeah. Yeah. When we finish building a studio, you'll come to that because that place is kind of crazy, too. Have you seen the new place yet?
No.
I gotta take you over there. It's pretty fun. I've been posting Instagram stories about the renovation of that place.
Cool.
Are you taking any before and after pictures of your place?
Well, no. I mean, we not like officially. We have an interior designer contractor kind of do a whole thing.
Gotcha,
I think they've
gotcha.
Been kind of documenting. It's pretty much done now, though. We just need to like furnish it and finish all the electrical stuff.
And then never be there.
Yeah, I think my fiance will get some time there this summer, but she's going to be with me too in Italy this summer. So yeah, we won't see it until. Like, I've got, like, maybe a week and a half before season 5 starts.
Oh, you'll drop all your luggage.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, gotta go.
Gotta go.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
had crazy. A good time. But Grant Gustin, thank you so much for being here. And, yeah, and watch The Flash, everyone. Not you.
Do
I'm
it.
Telling everyone, do it. The end. Enjoy your burrito. Awesome.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think, some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat.
Yeah.
Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Once Upon a Beat.